Thomas, welcome to the Too Many Pints of Guinness edition of the Bitcoin Infinity Show.
Yeah, thank you for having me, Knut.
Yeah, nice to have you here. You haven't been on the show before, so why don't you tell our listeners a bit about who you are and what you do?
Yeah, gladly. So I'm Thomas Jaegers. I'm currently the CFO and COO of Relay, which is the biggest Bitcoin-only broker in Europe.
Yeah, that's the TLDR, I guess. Could you be so when did you find Bitcoin? Where did you grow up? Like, what's your journey?
Sure. So I always like to say that I was a Bitcoiner before even knowing that Bitcoin existed. So in 2011 already, I was already holding speeches on the potential of complementary currencies in economies. So how having multiple currencies in running in parallel can actually stabilize economies by smoothing out the ebbs and flows. So I was already challenging the main monetary system, how it works, fractional reserve banking, and I had literally never heard of Bitcoin by that time. Then the first time I heard about it, like a traditional economist and finance person that I was, I completely discarded it, thought, yeah, there's nothing backing it, that's not something that I would be interested in. Then it kept popping up again and again. And eventually I started to get very interested. And at the time, 2014, I believe, I was working in risk management at ING in Germany. And I became the local expert on blockchain technology. So that's when I really dived in. And I still remember standing in front of the full board of ING in Germany and telling them that $400 and something per Bitcoin was grossly overpriced. So I wish I had said something different, even though...
You meant underpriced, yeah.
No. I meant overpriced clearly because the level of risk that this new instrument was facing at the time was not justifying even the few billion of capitalization that it had. And I would probably still stand by that statement in the sense that at the time it was an extremely risky instrument. So I think that, for example, today it is much more interesting to invest in Bitcoin today than it was, let's say, 10, 12 years ago, because at the time the likelihood that it would collapse was very significant, while today it is a much more, you know, accepted and developed and safer instrument.
So what do you think is the biggest contributing factor to it being more secure now than it was back then? Like,
well,
what changed?
The major shift was probably happening in 2017, around that date with the protocol war, you know, with the block size war. When people basically didn't know what was Bitcoin before. Is it a medium of exchange? Is it a store of value? Is it a time chain? You know, it was just a cool technology, but it hadn't been made clear what is it actually. Then came this block size war for a couple of years, and Bitcoin came out much stronger in the sense that the community had, after fighting for a couple of years, had finally aligned, this is what is Bitcoin. And they were then all fighting in the same direction. Something that we didn't have before.
No, and yeah, I remember that. And this is sort of what made my belief in Bitcoin ironclad, because to me, it was sort of proof that the users were in charge and not the big companies. So I view the big blockers as the big blocker narrative as a takeover attempt where they wanted to centralize it and wanted to control it. But the network resisted that hostile takeover. Is that how you view it too?
Absolutely. The thing is, it was really the event that proved that Bitcoin was properly decentralized. You had the key influencer in the space that were trying to push a certain narrative and to hard fork in one direction, and people just said no. And despite the key influencers being, you know, trying with all their efforts to do one thing, the people said, no, that's not what we want. We will do a different way. And that's when Bitcoin proved that it was effectively decentralized. And now Bitcoin becoming the first digital decentralized asset, that changed everything.
Yeah, that's similar to how I view it. No, not only the biggest influencers, but the biggest companies like BitPay and all the big miners. Everyone was on board with this New York agreement where they wanted to hard fork into SegWit 2x, which never happened. So yeah, there's a very important part of Bitcoin's history, I think. And just because we won that battle doesn't mean that we will win the war, though. Like, Bitcoiners will need to stay vigilant whenever new threats arise.
Correct. And there were other battles that came after. I mean, even entering the, let's say, the more traditional space was also an uphill struggle. You know, Bitcoin had to fight regulators and had to find other things like concentration of miners. You know, if you remember back in mid-2021, the main weakness of Bitcoin in my eyes was that you had something like 70% of miners based in China, which is extremely high national concentration of something essential for the network. And then the Chinese government, in their attempt to break Bitcoin, they did actually the one thing they could do to strengthen it was that they banned mining, like they properly banned mining. That was not the first time they tried, but that time they really went very hard on banning mining in China. What happened is that the miners spread around the globe and created more decentralization and therefore strengthened the network. And within 3 months, the hash rate was back to a new all-time high.
Yeah, and this is a subject we talk a lot about here, and we shouldn't get into the whole BIP110 debate too hard. But I think we're seeing a great strengthening of mining now, or a potential great strengthening of it, because, yes, that fixed the geographical problem of centralization of mining, but not necessarily the pools are still kind of centralized, and that comes with its own negative side effects, such as filters not working properly and stuff. It's sort of a side effect of mining being too centralized. But now you can rent hash and so and create your own block templates and mine through ocean or similar things like that, and thereby helping decentralize mining again to an even larger extent. And I think this is the real battle we have to fight. That's the biggest problem we have in Bitcoin, in my opinion. What's your thoughts?
Let me add some color so indeed the top seven mining pools now control about 75% of the hash power currently. However, the thing is with Bitcoin mining that pretty much with the click of a button, you can choose to move from one mining pool to another as a private solo miner.
A hasher.
Thank you. So as a hasher, you can choose to move elsewhere. And therefore, if there were ever one mining pool or a consortium of mining pool that were doing stuff that are not in line with what the hashers agree with, it would be fairly simple and fast for the people behind it to actually move. And it makes the whole system more resilient by itself by enabling this ultra fast change of jurisdiction in some sense. So if I compare to a country, it's as if your politician does not do what you want, then just by the click of a button, you could say, oh, well, I was in France, now I'm in Germany, you know, and I follow a different set of rules. You know, if that was possible, I'm sure that the politician will think twice about what they are doing, because their voters would move elsewhere very easily. And this is exactly what we have with these mining pools, that their voters, in some sense, the people who contribute to their revenue, can move away if they do stuff that are not in line with the social contract.
Some would argue that this is true in theory, but that in reality, Antpool and friends already have most of the network, because it's very hard to prove that a consortium or a cabal does not exist. And this sort of requires every hash salesman to really follow the money and see who's actually owning the pool. And that can be trickier than you think. So what are your thoughts on that? Like, is Antpool and friends, Antpool is Bitmain's mining company, like the biggest manufacturer of miner hardware. So are they effectively like monopoly? Is there effectively a monopoly there, or do you think we're already there's no risk there? Like, what's your view?
I don't think that anything is without risk. I would like to take a step back and try to believe in the network. The incentives that are on the network are so far effective and are suggesting that there are the right checks in place to prevent a monopoly to take over, for the reason that we have just mentioned. In that sense, while I'm not too much in the nitty gritty details of Antpool and their inner workings, I trust that the network is actually built on the right incentives.
And yeah.
And I we're seeing more and more of that with this hash renting movement. I really like that you can now rent hash and be your own mining pool, so to speak, instead of just letting the pools be there and decide what blocks to mine on. So there are things being done. Anyway, what's happening at Relay? First of all, what is Relay? And can you describe what separates you from other similar companies? Yeah,
gladly. So we are an exchange in the sense you send us euros or Swiss francs and we send you Bitcoin, or the other way around, of course. And we are taking a small fee on the transaction. So very simple business model. And actually, simplicity is at the core of everything we are doing. We are really striving to be the simplest place to buy Bitcoin in self-custody. So, of course, Bitcoin only, and of course, self-custody only. So we are genuinely trying to, live by the principles of Bitcoin, create more awareness of the benefits of self-custody and making it simple, so that we want to put as much Bitcoin as possible in the pockets of Europeans. So I'm saying Europeans because that's where we are focused now. So we come from Swiss origins, therefore, of course, licensed in Switzerland, and now for a few months licensed in France under the MiCA regime, and therefore having access to the entire EU market under the strictest regulation. And still, we managed to do this as cleanly as possible, so provide the best service possible to users, while at the same time respecting the tough regulations that we are facing.
Yeah, and those regulations, they require you to KYC quite hard, right? Yeah.
Yep, that was something that try to delay as much as possible to the extent that it was possible in Switzerland in the early days. At some point, it was no longer the case. So, of course, we need to comply if we wanted to continue providing Bitcoin to Europeans. So we did that. And now with MiCA regulation, there are even a few more additional things that we need to comply with in terms of KYC. But obviously, we are limiting ourselves to know the strict minimum that is necessary to comply with the regulation. I mean, to be fully compliant with the regulation. We know what we need to know, but we do not care about anything more than that, obviously, because we also try to respect the privacy of customers to the maximum extent acceptable by the law.
And has any authority from any specific jurisdiction ever asked you for customer information, or how does that work? Like how authoritarian is this stuff? Like how intrusive is it?
So on the one hand, we need to keep all of this information impeccably documented and store it for multiple years. In Switzerland, in order for us to provide data about a specific customer, we need to have a request coming directly from the police or from directly from the authorities from Switzerland. So let's say if we have somebody from, an exchange somewhere in the EU asking for information about a Swiss customer, if they are asking us directly, we are not even allowed by law to provide it to them. We need to tell them, guys, that would be illegal for us to provide you with anything. So if you want to have that information, you need to go through your authorities that reaches out to the authorities of Switzerland, and then they come to us to get this information. That happens, but to be honest, only when there is a fair suspicion, when there is really something suggesting that there might be, potentially illegal activities going on. So it is not a daily occurrence, but it happens every once in a while.
So what's your personal opinion on MiCA? I don't know how much of this you're willing or even able to disclose, but do you appreciate that there's a clear regulation now, or do you think it's bullshit?
All right, I'll try to have the
diplomatic answer.
Well, it's two-sided. On the one hand, we are living in a world where financial services are regulated, and being a fully regulated financial service, it provides some sense of security and assurance to the capital markets, but also to users that we are doing everything by the rules. So on that sense, it might create some goodwill in this for users, to because they know that we are, you know,
legitimacy.
Yeah, exactly. Fully legitimate doing things by the book. At the same time, Mika claims to exist to protect the customer. And in that sense, this regulation is an utter failure. It is actually not only not reaching that goal, I think it is doing the exact opposite of what it's claiming to do. For example, well, obviously, since Mika is so broad and requires so much additional workload from our side, I mean, in order to stay profitable, since we have additional cost, we need to make additional revenue, and that cost goes to the user ultimately. Not only for us, for all exchanges. I mean, the compliance cost is very real.
Like all interventionism, like all state interventionism, the customer always pays for it.
Exactly. So customers will pay a higher price for the service that he's willing to get. In addition, he will need to renounce on quite a lot of privacy. You know, we will need to know, you know, a scan of your face, have a scan of your ID. As from a certain threshold, we will need to have a proof of address. If you go into high net worth individuals or businesses, we need to have, you know, even more documentation, proof of wealth, source of funds, and, you know, even more stuff that, you know, we do not require that level of due diligence to ensure that the client is actually a fair deal in respect of the law. But Mika requires so much more than what is strictly needed. So the customer has technical hurdles by need to provide all of this information. He needs to renounce his privacy. He has a worse service. And if all of that was preventing fraud from happening, then maybe we could justify having that kind of regulation. But the thing is, Mika is not preventing any fraud from happening at all. Anybody willing to do fraud will do fraud. There are plenty of other ways to do it. And by the way, anybody willing to do fraud is not going to use Bitcoin to do it. That would be the stupidest idea in the world, to use Bitcoin to commit, you know, any type of crime. If you want to commit a crime, would you really want to have the proof of all of your transactions recorded on a public ledger that can never be modified, accessible by anybody in the entire world forever? I mean, this is ridiculous. So criminals are not using Bitcoin to commit fraud. They are using the traditional means, and mainly the US dollar and other fiat currencies. So it is a bit of a weird thing, that it probably comes from a good intention, but it was badly implemented, and the outcome of it is the exact opposite of what it was meant to achieve.
Like so many other government interventionist things, like it. Yeah, it's sad. And do you think Mika is damaging Europe in this sense, that Europe will fall behind because the hurdles are now bigger here than on other continents? Or is that of no importance?
Yes, and we are seeing that firsthand. We have some customers coming to us and willing to do some trades, and we have done our due diligence. We know they are legit. We know they are all fine. However, we require so much additional documents for Mika that they are like, you know what, let me just use this offshore other exchange that offers similar rates and just does not require me to send all the documents that you guys are requesting. And which, by the way, again, what we are requesting is a strict minimum that Mika requires, but it's already too much compared to offshore exchanges.
I know what you mean. Like the whole when I go to El Salvador, for instance, the way I'm treated there as opposed to how I'm treated in Europe, if you tell any normie in Europe that you work in Bitcoin, they'd look at you like, what planet are you from? And are you a criminal? So it's always met with some level of suspicion. And I think that's so sad, because it's what we're doing is like the best thing for the world ever. So why?
Yeah, but to be honest, not only with Bitcoin. Now in Europe, if you even try to use your bank account for anything let's say, for any transaction that is beyond the strict, you know, the low amount, they are treating you by default like a criminal. Like, oh, explain to us where you have these funds coming from. Like, well, from my other bank account at, you know, your neighboring bank, you know, and you need to explain yourself. And if you're trying to make a payment that is above the minimal level that they, the minimal threshold that they set, they, you need to explain why you make that payment, where it's going to, you know, where you have the funds from. Just, you are treated like a criminal for basic banking services. Shouldn't we do the exact opposite? Treat people as normal human beings until you have actually a fair suspicion that they are doing something bad, which in most cases here is not the case.
No, it's the opposite of innocent until proven guilty. It's like guilty until you prove yourself innocent.
Exactly.
So it's pretty vile. So, given all that, are you hopeful for Europe, or like what are your predictions for Europe in the future, and specifically for the EU? Like, do you see it falling apart, and is there no hope until that happens, or what's your view on European politics?
I'm an optimist, so I would like to be hopeful for Europe. Unfortunately, the evidence is stacking against that view. We really are seeing vibes of the end of an empire. You know, like, it always reminds me of the end of the Roman Empire, how everything collapsed and how we regressed like 1,000 years afterwards. It feels like we are going in that direction, unfortunately. And while you have other places in the world that are booming and doing more with less, so proving that it is possible. So Europe, with all this over-regulation that makes absolutely no sense, is really shooting itself in the foot. It is, you know, killing itself. It is a suicide, really. It is a business suicide. It is cultural suicide that Europe is going through. However, Europeans have proved that they can achieve a lot of stuff. I'm sure that together we can find ways to improve the system. And that's also why I'm working in Bitcoin, because I do have hope that we can make something better for the future. And the Europe that I want to leave to my kids is better than what the Europe that we are seeing now.
Yeah. So, in your opinion, what will that require? Like, what do you think needs to change? How do we make Europeans more aware of the problems at hand? Because right now it feels like people are walking like zombies into their own destruction.
For some stuff, unfortunately, people need to hit the wall before realizing that they were walking in the wrong direction. So I'm afraid that this is actually needed. In some sense, that things need to get bad enough before people wake up. People had with communism, you know, things went to really, really bad before people understood, oh yeah, that's absolutely not what we want. And now people that came out of it, they are trying to spread the word on how, you know, all the bad things of socialist environment like the USSR. At the time, I do hope that we do not need to go there. So that's why education on, you know, what is money, on incentives for politicians, for businesses, for individuals is so important. So I do have great hope that education can help solve the issue. But even my natural optimism tends to be shaken these days.
The Starship Troopers meme come to mind, like the. I'm doing my part. Like, we're doing our part here,
trying the best we can.
Oh, mate. It is what it is. And if you travel around a bit in Europe, you can see that, like, the way my experience is that Eastern Europe is way more freedom minded than Western Europe at this point, because they know what happens. Like, they know what the path that Western Europe is on right now leads to in the end. So, because their parents had to experience that horrible thing.
Precisely. I remember this map of Germany after the last elections, where you had all Western Germany who vote as mostly socialist and Eastern Germany who didn't, because they are the ones who 2 generations ago knew what it was to live under a socialist government. So maybe people need to learn the hard way, which is unfortunate, but
I have an older German friend who told me about a side of the story of the fall of the Berlin Wall that I hadn't heard before, and that is like the official narrative is that what happened when the wall fell is that Eastern Germans were now liberated and adopted Western values, and they became more. All of Germany became more freedom-minded because this was a great win for freedom and everything. But what they left out of the story is that the East Germans started questioning the system of West Germany. So, oh, you have to pay for kindergarten here. We never had to pay in East Germany. Or like, oh, you have to pay for healthcare. We never had to do that in East Germany. And then the West Germans got jealous and started voting for more and more socialism there. So the effect is... Sadly, it goes both ways, and I think, unfortunately, the longer the democratic process with socialism baked in is allowed to continue, the more and more left leaning it becomes, because the more and more people get dependent on the redistribution of wealth, and more the public sector grows like a cancer, and then people are not going to vote against their own bread and butter. So if you're in the public sector, you're more likely to vote more left wing, and then you get a bigger public sector, and on it goes. So like, it's very hard to resist on a collective level, on a political level.
Yeah, that's a very good point. It reminds me of this cycle with the fourth turning.
Yeah.
So precisely along those lines that... Nations will rise to new heights, but then at some point will become corrupt and decline and ultimately collapse before having a chance to rise from the ashes again.
Yeah, and let's hope that we're not in a fourth turning now, even though it looks like that in many ways. So how does Bitcoin fix this for Europe?
Bitcoin fixes the incentives. One of the most important things about Bitcoin is not only the financial freedom that it provides, but how it puts in perspective time. You know, when we are living in an inflationary time where inflation is baked into the monetary policy by design and in the speech of people in charge of monetary politics, deflation is the worst thing that could happen, you know, and they are fighting against it, which is obviously absolute nonsense. You know, people would prefer to live in a world where things are getting less expensive over time, so that you also do not need to spend your wealth. You know, you are not forced to either spend your wealth or lose it. You know, if I earn 100 euros, I would like to be able to, for example, set it aside for my kids in 30 years. Well, nowadays I cannot do that because in one generation, I know that at best, it will be worth maybe only 50 euros by that time. So an inflationary system is creating an abnormally bad incentives for spending immediately for a society of immediate consumption, while a system that has natural deflation baked into it, like Bitcoin, pushes the narrative towards more long-term consumption. You think long-term, you think about saving for rainy days, you think about children and the next generations, and therefore you build also stuff that are more meaningful, stuff that are not just meant for the next quarter earnings, but for the next 10, 20, 100 years.
Equality over quantity.
Precisely.
In a way, quality is not the opposite of quantity, but the opposite of equality. So if everyone's equal, everyone has less.
In that sense. So,
I view deflation, the scaremongering around deflation, as the biggest lie ever told, like that we need inflation for the economy to thrive, because it's so easily debunked. Like if things go down in price over time, if you need something, you will buy it. Like if you want it, those things have fallen in price like orders of magnitude faster than anything else that falls in price, even in the fiat world. And it's not like people are buying fewer phones or computers. Like, so why do you think it is that people are falling for this lie on such absurd scales that prices ought to go up? Because when you really think about it, it's so easy. Like if human beings practice doing things, do they get better or worse at the things they're doing? They get better. So why aren't oil prices falling forever? That's a natural follow-up question. And why don't more people see that? To me, it seems like only Bitcoiners and maybe some anarcho-capitalists see it, but no one else.
Welcome to the spooky nighttime edition of the Ad Reads. You should check out the Bitcoin Advisor. They're very good for inheritance planning and have a multi-sig setup that is super cool. Bitcoinadvisor.com. You should also check out the Bitbox. It's a great hardware wallet. The Nano 2 is their latest edition. It's super cool and they're privacy focused and very neat to use. Bitbox.swiss is their web address. And Bull Bitcoin, of course. Bull Bitcoin has a cool exchange, a super-based exchange that does the least amount of KYC that is allowed anywhere. They're now in Europe as well. And the Bull Bitcoin wallet is super cool. Check it out. Use code INFINITY everywhere. And you get a big discount. Boo! Also, check out BitcoinInfinity.com. That's where you find all my books and Luke's book for Bitcoin. And a bunch of other books and t-shirts and stuff. It's a really cool website. We made it ourselves. Wow.
So actually, I'm coming from a traditional background in economics. So two masters in economics, an MBA, CFA certification and other advanced
certification. Sorry to hear that.
Yeah, I know. So I'm trying to recover from that. Yeah. But my point here is I went through all of the traditional learning about it and never in any of these traditional teachings and lessons, they challenge the concept of money or they never start from base principles. They just assume that, you know, a world with inflation is the base and that's somehow desirable, but they never justify that properly. And when you have, you know, when all the people working in finance, in economics, have gone through these traditional teachings, when they have never challenged it, it's difficult to suddenly suggest to them something so drastically different from everything they are used to. You know, it's very difficult to admit that you were wrong in your assumptions all along. It's an incredibly humbling experience to go through. It's very difficult. That's why it took me way longer than I dare to admit to get into Bitcoin, because it didn't make sense with everything I had learned. And it's only when, you know, when you start challenging everything and starting from base principles that you realize, oh, actually, you know, is a fixed money supply not better, you know? And then you look at history and you realize that in the Bretton Woods era, you know, that's the fastest pace of increase in wealth and standards of living. So after the Second World War, but also before that in the late 1800s, when we were under a gold standard, that were periods of history. Yeah, exactly. That were periods in history where things were going incredibly well, because you did not have the core of the economy, so the monetary system, systematically stealing energy from the system. So the system was not bleeding out its energy permanently and therefore creating bad incentives. Now, if you are a government, which theory do you prefer? The theory that says big government is good or the theory that says small government is good? You know, obviously they will be tempted towards the ones that is built on lies, the Keynesians economics that do not make sense from a Austrian economics perspective, because it's in their interest. And then that's the narrative that they will push. And therefore, everything is built around this.
Yeah. And if they're funding all the universities and funding all the media outlets and subsidizing media that agrees with them, then that's what you're going to get. You're going to get indoctrination of every single citizen that this is the way things are supposed to be. And it requires these experts to drop a lot of their egos, I think, because they have so much invested in it. It's the sunken cost fallacy is the name of it, right? When you're so in, maybe I'm mixing it up with some other fallacy or bias, but you're so invested in this thing that you've made yourself an expert in for so many years of your life that you're not willing to give it up, even though that's obviously wrong. Then that requires self-reflection and self-examination, and sadly enough, most people never do that to the extent required, at least.
Exactly. So ego is a very important thing. But let's look at it from a positive perspective. So fortunately, we have the truth on our side, and Bitcoin has proved it over the years that, you know, in a Bitcoin world, things are getting cheaper over time. It has proved that adoption is growing. So it has proven a lot of things that Bitcoiners have claimed from the very beginning, and we are getting more numerous by the day. So fortunately, we have truth on our side, and I stay optimistic that this is really the way out of the sad fourth turning that we are facing.
Hashtag the Maxis were right. that's such a good meme, because we were, like, always. It all becomes so predictable when you see it from this lens. I view Bitcoin in a way as a lens to view the world through. If you denominate in sat, you can see what's actually going on with the economy and how your house loses value every year and so on and so forth. And it solves so many problems. Like, property is one, because right now you have all the fiat rich people buying up property to use it as a store of value and not as housing for human beings.
So it's true. And that comes downstream from what we were saying on the inflationary world.
Absolutely.
So all the very rich people have understood the key trick, the cheat code of the game is short the currency, long the asset. So you buy real asset, stocks, real estate, Bitcoin, and you short the currency. You take a loan against your asset, you take a mortgage and so on, so that your mortgage becomes, so the debt you have becomes less valuable over time, while your asset become more valuable over time. So that's a cheat code that unfortunately is only accessible to people who have accumulated more wealth. And that is precisely causing the rich to get richer, the poor to get poorer, not because one is better than the other, but simply because they have access to assets that grow in value, while the people that are most in need of this asset do not have this access. And that's precisely where Bitcoin is changing the game. Anybody can buy for 1 euro of Bitcoin at virtually no cost, can receive Bitcoin. You know, you can trade anything you own. You can trade your time. You can trade your energy for Bitcoin. So you can have access to the best asset that also has all the other properties that are desirable, such as censorship resistance, such as it's very difficult to take it from you without your consent, and all the other things.
Yeah, and this is very important, because if you accept Bitcoin for your goods and services, instead of buying them off a relay, which you should also do, by the way, but then you don't have to go to any KYC process unless you want to. Some would call that a black market, and call it an orange market. And at least it's way more difficult to do for governments to do anything about that.
That's correct.
And in reality, it's just communication. I'm giving you a number by sending you Bitcoin. I'm not giving you anything physical. I'm just communicating with you. So if you think about what is the ethics and morals of that, like, how can that be a crime?
I think it's absurd. In the US, they have the First Amendment to defend this, because indeed, Bitcoin is nothing else than information. So it's purely communication, and therefore should be defended by the First Amendment on freedom of speech. We do not have that in Europe, but the logic and the ethics behind it still remains. It is nothing else than information. And the value that we attribute to it is something that just depends on us.
Yeah, value is subjective. The thing you said about how to win the fiat game is to take mortgages and buy assets. The saddest part about that is that the more people do that, the greater the pace of the decline, because the mortgages themselves, taking out a huge loan, is what creates the money printing. Banks print money when people take out a loan. Like, they just pretend that the money exists now, and then you have to pay it back with interest. So
creating credit, so taking a loan is creating a credit, and therefore increases the M2 money supply. So M2 is a measure of the total money supply. Yes.
Yeah, and that increases the money that has to be paid back. That also will have to be created by loans, because it's not circulation in circulation yet, which means all fiat currencies are hyperinflating. It's just that they haven't, like, they're on different points on that curve, but they'd all die that way.
Yes, I mean, it's mathematically provable that, you know, the only way for the system to eventually unravel is to print and always to print more money at an increasing pace. Yeah. So that's the only way that it will work. So in some sense, Bitcoin has already won just by the design of the game.
Yeah.
Now we just need to wait to see it happen, and hopefully, you know, prevent the bad stuff that will try to come in the way, because the people that are deeply in this old legacy system will obviously fight it. There was the phase, first they ignore you, then they mock you, then they fight you. I think we are really getting now in the phase, then they fight you, and then will come the phase, then you win, because these people will realize that at some point you cannot ban Bitcoin. You cannot prevent people from doing it. Even if you turn off the internet, there are other ways to share Bitcoin. It's just information. It is not bannable.
No, and also they're shooting themselves in the foot. It's just like just before the Soviet Union fell, like all the higher ups in the Soviet Union, they would all have been better off in a different system. Even those that benefit the most from the fiat system would be better off on a Bitcoin standard. And this is the saddest part about it. They fight you even though it's bad for them. Yeah.
Yeah, but like the addict, the drug addict, you know, stopping the drug immediately is a lot of pain immediately. And you prefer to kick the can down the road and leave that pain for the next administration while, you know, keeping stuff as they are for now. But then it makes the entire process last much longer than it has to. It makes everybody worse off.
Yeah, absolutely. So hope in a bleak outlook on the future is the medicine. I think the hope is the remedy, and Bitcoin is hope in this sense, because it allows you to just bypass all of this and survive through the chaos that will ensue at some point. The hard thing to predict is when the real decline, where you know, civil unrest and stuff like that happens, but everything is pointing in that direction in the fiat world, and everything is pointing in the other direction in the Bitcoin world. Yeah.
Precisely. Yeah. So timing is impossible, but the direction of travel seems to be pretty clear.
Yeah. All right. Well, what else is going on in your life, and what else are you? Is there anything else on the roadmap for Relay? What else can you tell me about that?
Yeah. So ultimately, Relay is striving to be the simplest way to get Bitcoin in self-custody. So that's currently, but we want to go also beyond that. So basically what we want is enable people to take control of their future. So we want to be the Bitcoin app in Europe, and we will build whatever is necessary to make that happen. If you think about the internet, let's say a generation ago, actually there was also stuff that are very similar to Bitcoin today. Did you know that there were also protocol wars on the internet?
TCP/IP and stuff.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. TCP/IP was not obvious. There were alternatives that were fighting for getting their share. And then there were layer two solutions built on top of the base layer. So that sounds awfully a lot like Bitcoin has been through in the last decade. Yeah. But ultimately today, when you send an email, you do not care whether it's built on SMTP, that is itself built on TCP/IP, and, you know, and everything in between. You do not care about that. All you care about is that in the to field, you write mama, and the subject, you write I love you, and then you click send, and she receives it. And that's it. And nobody needs to know what SMTP is, or TCP/IP, or anything else. Yeah. And I think this is the direction that Bitcoin is also taking. You know, eventually, what you will have is your savings app, and you have your Bitcoin, and you will send your Bitcoin to not to, you know, a BC1Q address on chain or to a Lightning address, or, you know, and you will not need to manage your node and channels and all these stuff. All of that will be done in the background. What the users will know is that I send money from Thomas to Knut, and that's it. And that will work systematically. And that's all they will need to know. So the same way the email went from very complicated to very simple, I think that's what Bitcoin is going through. And that's the revolution we want to be part in. Simplifying Bitcoin so that we can reach the entirety of the population and not just the OG Bitcoiners and hardcore libertarians and all the maxis, the freedom maximalists out there. But everybody, because everybody need Bitcoin and everybody will benefit from Bitcoin.
I mean, to play the devil's advocate there, I mean, the centralization of Gmail, for instance, and emails in general that people are using these centralized platforms, it's all a trade-off. Like, convenience is always a trade-off. So don't you see risks with Bitcoin becoming more convenient for the average user? I mean, it's still dependent on people actually doing their homework and running their nodes and verifying and even participating in what rules they think the network should have. So,
like for every development, we need to be careful to do it the right way and indeed always enable people to go one way or the other. That comes back to the topic of incentives that I was sharing at the beginning. We want to build something that users can use with convenience while at the same time they have the possibility to hard fork, to go in the nitty-gritty details, to use other services, and to have a system where they are not locked in one app, but where they can use other stuff. I wouldn't want even Relay to be the only app out there. That wouldn't be good for the market, because that would be too easily to grab from regulatory perspective or from other perspectives. You know, we want to have a system where there are multiple players that are each providing a great service, maybe services to different audiences, a bit different, so that users have the choice of how they want to get their Bitcoin, to transact their Bitcoin, or to do anything else. All the ideas we think about today about Bitcoin, and also all the other ideas that we cannot even fathom nowadays and that will come up in the coming years.
Yeah,
looking forward to that future. Unfortunately, I think we're running out of time here. I'm getting the signs. So thank you very much, Thomas, for coming on. Where can people find you on the internet? And I guess relay.swiss is still the address? Or?
Relay.app.
Relay.app. Okay.
Is the website. And for me personally, mostly on X, LinkedIn, and Noster.
All right.
Thank you very much.
It was a pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Yes, this has been the Bitcoin Infinity Show. Brush your teeth. Goodbye.